Hello there, and welcome to this half hour of the Illinois Radio Reader. My name is Cedric Richardson, and in this half hour, I'll be bringing you the Vermilion County News, with a concentration on Danville and surrounding areas. In our first article, a nod to Canon. A new apartment complex for veterans has been named Canon Place, in honor of the influential congressman who lobbied to bring the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to Danville. The Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System and Mercy Housing Lakefront announced the name of the 65-unit supportive housing building on the VA Danville campus. The complex will provide affordable and supportive housing for homeless, at risk of homelessness, and disabled veterans and their families. The name honors Joseph Gurney Cannon, who served in Congress for 46 years between 1873 and 1923, including an 8-year stint as the 35th Speaker of the House of Representatives. His tenure as a congressman ranks second among Republican representatives to this day. In 1876, Cannon moved to Danville, where he resided for the rest of his life. Cannon used his political influence to establish the Danville branch of the National Home for Disabled Volunteer Soldiers in 1898. The Danville branch became a neuropsychiatric hospital in 1935. VA Ileana Healthcare System continues to improve the health of the men and women who have served the country. A formal ribbon-cutting ceremony for the apartments is scheduled for April the 20th. Stephanie Young, the director of the Ileana System, said Congressman Joseph Cannon's influential role to bringing the VA facility to Danville was the basis for naming the new Veteran Supportive Housing Building in his honor. The VA in Danville is here today because of this congressman. Sela Robles, the property manager at Cannon Place, said about 58 units are occupied, so there are some vacancies. Applicants go through the VA first before being referred to Mercy Housing. Robles said 11 children reside at the complex, and she hopes to add a play area for them later. Last week, women representing various levels of the American Legion Auxiliary toured the apartments and the VA. Accompanying them was Cherry Stanton of Monmouth, American Legion Department of Illinois' first female commander. Mary E. Davis of Lacey, Washington, national president of the Legion Auxiliary, was impressed with the apartments. She is president of the world's largest patriotic service organization based in Indianapolis. The facility for homeless veterans is an amazing facility to give homeless veterans not only a new beginning, but a place to restore their dignity, she said. The building includes 65 furnished apartments, community gathering spaces, resident computer center, fitness center, outdoor patio, and supportive services offices. Some of the rooms look out at a gazebo and wooded area. There's also a donation room that collects items for the veterans, such as dishes, cleaning supplies, shower curtains, pillows, shampoo, and other toiletries donated by various groups and businesses. Residents began moving in at the end of September 2016. The supportive housing development will provide residents with access to medical needs, referrals to services such as mental and physical health assessments and treatment, linkages to community partnerships designed to maintain self-sufficiency, and the opportunity for continuing education at neighboring Danville Area Community College. In 2015, a groundbreaking occurred for the $11 million project. The site was once a golf course on the VA campus. The Danville Housing Authority, along with partners, the VA and Mercy Housing Lakefront, secured $245,850 in funding from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development for 65 project-based Veterans Affairs supportive housing vouchers for local homeless veterans. Mark Angelini, the president of Mercy Housing Lakefront, said in a news release, "We are proud to work alongside the VA to provide those who have served our country with the safe, stable homes they deserve. With the opening of Cannon Place, Central Illinois has one of the premier housing options for veterans in the country. We look forward to providing high-quality property management and resident services in the years to come." The facility is a collaborative partnership between VA and Mercy Housing Lakefront, one of the largest and most innovative community development organizations in the Midwest. The Enhanced Use Lease Program outleases underused real estate to the private sector to develop supportive housing for homeless, at risk of homelessness, and disabled veterans and their families. The Enhanced Use Lease development was made possible by the financial support of a variety of public, private, and nonprofit organizations, including the Illinois Housing Development Authority, Federal Home Loan Bank of Chicago, U.S. Bank, First Midwest Bank, National Equity Fund, Local Initiatives Support Corporation, City Community Development, the MetLife Foundation, and the Home Depot Foundation. Mercy Housing officials have said they'd like to construct a second building in a second phase. About Ileana, in the fiscal year 2016, VAIHSCS provided service to about 33,052 veterans with a catchment area that covers 30 counties in Illinois and Indiana. It also operates community-based outpatient clinics in Decatur, Mattoon, Peoria, Springfield, and West Lafayette, Indiana. About Mercy. Mercy Housing Lakefront has been working for 30 years to build a region where everyone has an affordable home to use as a springboard to achieve better health, economic security, and a brighter future for their kids. By the end of 2017, MHL and its sister companies will have developed or preserved nearly 9,000 affordable homes, enabling more than 16,000 people to live in hope in Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. Learn more at mercyhousinglakefront.org, facebook.com at Mercy Housing Lakefront, and Twitter at twitter.com/mercyhousingif. A Hoopston man is charged with child endangerment after a standoff. A 27-year-old Hoopston man was arrested early Tuesday morning after threatening to harm himself and his children, according to police reports. Hoopston police responded at 8:21 p.m. Monday to a residence in the 300 block of Dice Street, where Apollonar Solis Jr. reportedly made a Facebook post stating that he was going to harm himself and his children. The report also stated Solis refused to come out of the residence when asked by officers. The Vermilion County Sheriff's Department Special Operations Group was then dispatched and an arrest warrant was obtained, according to police. Solis was taken into custody on child endangerment charges and later transported to the public safety building in Danville to await arraignment. No further information was available early Tuesday. In other news, Duncan is to take over the county treasurer spot. Darren Duncan will take over for Vermilion County Treasurer Sue Stein, who will retire March 31st. Vermilion County Republican Party Chairman Bill Wright, who also is the county auditor, said Monday those at a special GOP Central Committee meeting conducted Saturday elected Duncan to fill the remainder of Stein's term. Duncan now serves as a representative of District 1 on the county board. Stein announced her retirement in January after serving as county treasurer for more than 22 years. At the time, she said she was fortunate to have worked for the county for 38 years in total, and it has been a wonderful time. In a Monday telephone interview, Duncan said he was excited to start work at his new job in April. "It's a big change in my life," he said, "going from a farm to a county office." Wright said the committee members were presented with four candidates who were introduced in Stein's position, and they're looking to moving forward with getting Duncan settled in after Stein retires. "We felt like he had the strongest qualifications and presented the best case," said Wright. Wright added he was thankful for everyone who stepped up and applied for the position. County Board Chairman Mike Marin said that Duncan's experience on both county and school boards, he thinks Duncan will do a good job and he was definitely looking forward to working with him. "I think there's some cool changes we can make to the finance system of the county with him and Bill Wright as the auditor." According to Duncan, his public service career started as a member of the Rossville-Alvin School Board, where he served two terms, filling in for both the secretary and president positions. About 2 years ago, he was appointed to the county board to represent District 1, following former board chairman Gary Weinert's resignation. He was elected to his board seat last November. Originally from Potomac, Duncan now resides in Rossville and works as a farmer in northern Vermilion County. He graduated from Western Illinois University with a BA in political science. He and his wife, Natalie, have four children. Duncan also serves on the Vermilion County Land Bank Board. A pair have been arrested in Indiana for carjacking at a Danville Walmart. Two Peoria area residents have been arrested in connection with a vehicle carjacking in Danville over the weekend. At 7 p.m. Saturday, police responded to a woman at Walmart at 4104 North Vermilion Street who told them that she had left her children in her vehicle in the parking lot while she stepped outside. And at some point, a man and a woman approached it, forced the two children to get out, and then drove away, leaving them in the parking lot. The children were not injured. The vehicle was later found in Indianapolis in the possession of Dwayne Jackson, 24, of Peoria, and Julia Hill, 22, of Chillicothe. Both were arrested and are being held in Marion County, Indiana, on charges of possession of a stolen vehicle. Arrest warrants were also issued for the pair in Vermilion County on charges of vehicular hijacking with a bond set at $100,000. Anyone with information is asked to call Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. In other police news, police are investigating a home invasion and robbery. Police are searching for two men who robbed residents at gunpoint over the weekend in their home on Columbia Street. At 7:30 p.m. Friday, Danville police responded to a residence in the 400 block of West Columbia for a report of a robbery. Officers spoke with the victims and learned that a home invasion had taken place. The victims told police that two men came into their home armed with handguns and demanded items from them. They took several items, hit the victims, and stole their vehicles, a Toyota Prius and a Mazda SUV. Both victims suffered minor injuries and were treated at the scene. Around 9:30 p.m. Friday, officers recovered the Mazda SUV when they spotted it, unoccupied, and parked in the 900 block of Belton Drive in Danville. At 8:30 a.m. Saturday, officers recovered the Toyota Prius when it was found, unoccupied and parked, in the 900 block of Hazel Street. Anyone with information about this crime should contact Danville Police at 217-431-2250. If wishing to remain anonymous, the Vermilion County Crime Stoppers number is 217-446-TIPS. A social worker says that reporting suspected abuse could save a life. The thought of two Vigo County children with severe disabilities being neglected and starving to death breaks my heart, says Lacey Squartz, a licensed clinical social worker who teaches a child welfare class at Indiana State University. I've always had a love for kids and working with them. It breaks my heart because these children didn't ask to be born into the world, and they didn't ask to be abused or neglected, says Quartz. It breaks my heart for the kids and adults involved. I know they have a story as well. There's a reason they got to this point. In both recent Vigo County cases, caregivers have been criminally charged with neglect resulting in the death of a dependent. A 9-year-old boy died in February, weighing about 15 pounds. A 5-year-old girl, who died in January, weighed less than 17 pounds. Autopsies cited malnutrition as the cause of their deaths. Many in the community are reeling from the tragedies and wondering what they can do. I don't think anyone wakes up and says, "Today, I'm going to abuse or neglect my child." Something in their past led them to this point, she said. It makes me sad for all parties involved. Squirt says if people suspect abuse or neglect, they should report it. Make sure your eyes are open and your ears are open, she said. If nothing is found, there is no harm done. You have peace of mind. I saw red flags and I did my part. But if there is abuse or neglect, you might save a child's life, said Squartz, an outpatient therapist with Valley Professions Community Health Center in Terre Haute. She previously worked for Hamilton Center Child and Adolescent Services for many years and supervised wraparound services, which included working with the State Department of Child Services. The question on everyone's mind is, how could anyone allow a severely disabled child to starve to death and not receive adequate health care? Sometimes drug use is involved, said Squirts. The four people charged in connection with the death of 9-year-old Cameron Hoopengamer tested positive for methamphetamine in their systems, and three tested positive for marijuana. They face additional charges after an autopsy determined Cameron had meth in his system. In the second case, a couple arrested had marijuana in their system. The child died January 21, 2016, and the arrest took place last week after a year-long investigation. Said Squartz, I think a lot of times people turn to drugs as a way to cope. Family or guardians might face financial stress or be overwhelmed by the level of care needed by a child with severe disabilities. A lot of times when drugs are involved, people are checked out and not present to be a parent, said Squartz. I think drugs are a big factor. It's scary to see the increase in drug use. Also, that severely disabled children may not be able to take care of some of the basic needs that non-disabled peers would be able to address. So basic needs are not met. Parents or guardians in such situations may not have adequate parenting skills or a support system. Maybe they were neglected as children themselves. A lot of these families don't have anyone to call if they need a break, or have questions, or can't handle something. They might be really stressed out from having a child with special needs. Because children with severe disabilities require much more care, they also are at higher risk for being abused or neglected, she said. Kim Dodson, executive director of ARC in Indiana, describes the two Vigo County cases as troubling and sad. I really do hope there is outrage in the sense of how could someone do this to someone in their care. She said at the same time, the community needs to ensure families are aware of and receive the support services that they reserve. It needs a village. It takes a village, and it really does. Her hope is that these situations occur not intentionally, but because people don't know there are resources out there that can help them. Hopefully, we can find ways to make sure they learn about these resources and support available to them so we don't let these tragedies occur. Caring for a child with severe physical and cognitive disabilities can be expensive and it can be difficult, but that's why we have to look at community resources. We can help you, and we can find a way to make it work. Those children deserve to have the highest quality of life possible, said Dodson. Commenting on how these tragedies can occur, Dodson says all cases are individualized, and it depends on the severity of the disability and whether or not it comes with behavior issues. Most certainly, there are behaviors that can be very difficult for anyone to deal with. Dodson said it might involve a parent or guardian who has other children to care for, is not getting enough sleep, is working and trying to make ends meet, and has no one to help them care for the loved one with the disability. It can be extremely stressful, she said, and it can really wear on a person. I can't for any reason explain or condone what any of these people allegedly did in Terre Haute. Dodson said, but I do understand the stress is hard to deal with. Arc of Indiana and its local chapters are here for them, families or caregivers under stress. We can help, she said. For those who can't cope anymore, she is encouraging them to call the organization. If they call, we can intervene in some way and make sure to no harm comes to the loved one. Medicaid waivers are available to provide support services for those with disabilities, but she is concerned about proposed cuts at the federal level. If we don't have more services and support available for people with disabilities and their families, I'm worried about more of these cases happening, she said. Medicaid waivers allow people with disabilities to receive home and community-based services, and there is a waiting list. In a letter to the editor, Dodson wrote, "We all can and must do better to protect and connect vulnerable children and adults with supports and services. Nothing we can do now will bring back Cameron, but we can do is learn from this tragedy to keep another from happening." The letter was written prior to the arrests in the second case. Sue Lofton writes for the Terre Haute, Indiana Tribune Star. And now, some of the obituaries for today. Paul Baumgart, 69, of Danville, died on Tuesday, January 17, 2017, in Vail, Arizona. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. March 21st at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, located 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Carolyn Carswell, 74, of Houston, died at 6:30 a.m. Sunday, March 12, 2017, at home. Services will be at 11 a.m. Thursday in Floral Hill Cemetery in Houston. Anderson Funeral Home, located at 427 West Main Street in Houston, is in charge of arrangements. And that is all of the obituaries for today. And finally, pork pulled apart, regulating the impact of hog farms. Since the end of January, citizens from Western Vermilion County gathered at village and Vermilion County board meetings to inquire and comment on two proposed large hog farms north of Fithian. Their concerns include potential odor air quality, and possible water pollution. The proposed facilities by Parks Shepherd and Parks Rademacher will each house up to 3,360 hogs. Vermilion County board members passed a non-binding resolution in February in favor of the proposals. Vermilion County has no countywide zoning, so only state regulations will apply to the operations. The Illinois Department of Agriculture and Illinois Environmental Protection Agency both require large livestock operations to comply with a number of rules and regulations. Pat Livingston, a Fithian resident since the 1970s, asks, "Can you imagine the smell that will more than likely consume our little place of paradise? Our town is going to be unbearable in the hot, humid days of summer. Our property value is going to tank." Todd Terry, a Fithian Village trustee, echoed Livingston's concern regarding property tax value in public comments made at the February County Board meeting. He also said he was initially for the farms, but became opposed once he knew the potential effects they could have on neighboring property taxes. Terry referenced a report found on Factory Farm Facts Protuse, farmtaxprotest.org, a 1999 study in Iowa that found proximity to a hog-concentrated animal feeding operation decreased neighboring property values by 40% within 1/2 mile, 30% within 1 mile, 20% within 1.15 miles, and 10% within 2 miles. Hog farms, such as the proposed park livestock operations, are licensed by the state under the 1996 Illinois Livestock Facilities Management Act. According to a spokesperson with the Illinois Department of Agriculture, their department is charged with receiving all documents relative to the proposed facilities, including the notice of intent to construct, facility design plans and specifications, transcripts and exhibits from the informational meetings, the county board recommendation, and all additional information received. Based on the review of the aforementioned information, the department will make its final determination regarding compliance with the act, the spokesperson said. If all requirements have been met in accordance with the Livestock Management Facilities Act, the application may then be approved. That ruling is expected to be issued 90 days after the notice of intent to construct is filed, or by March 30th for the park's facilities. The IDA may instead request additional information from the operators by that date. Once constructed, the IDA does not collect information regarding community and neighbor relations between hog farm operators after a proposal has been approved. Any issues regarding air quality complaint or manure storage leakage are then handled by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. The IEPA spokesperson and said citizens in Vermilion County with an air quality concern should contact his facilities. That is, according to the document, what to expect from an Illinois EPA livestock facility inspection. Field agents are authorized by the state law to inspect it for and investigate possible violations of the Illinois Environmental Protection Act. The Champaign IEPA office can be reached at 258-5800. Thank you once again for joining me here on the Illinois Radio Reader. Again, my name is Cedric Richardson. It's been a pleasure, as always, to join and read with you. Until next time, have a great day. Goodbye.
Students said they appreciate having an open dialogue with Geddes and other administrators, and their ideas are being taken to heart. It's nice to have a say in what we eat because we're the ones who have to eat it. I think it's the first step in greater things to come. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for March 13th. Hope you have a great day.